It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Happy Monday to you. We all made it through the heat yesterday and on Saturday here in the Pacific Northwest. Welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk Radio for the Pacific Northwest, from Canada to California, from Idaho to the Pacific. It is great to have you on board. We have 21 stations that serve the Northwest every day this way, and I'm glad to take your calls from all those cities around the Northwest at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. A fantastic decision from the United States Supreme Court today. The Supreme Court has now reinstated President Trump's travel ban, the temporary travel ban from six largely Muslim countries. The president and many of us said he was right all along. And while those lower, more liberal courts decided that they were going to stick it to the president every chance they got, we knew that when it got to the U.S. Supreme Court, that they would make a sensible decision. And they have made a sensible decision. So we'll talk about that today. And our quick poll: was the Supreme Court right to reinstate President Trump's temporary travel ban? You can answer the question by going to LarsLarson.com. And glad to have you do it. On Friday, we asked you, is Johnny Depp's assassination comment a threat against Trump? 88% of you joined me in voting yes. Only 12% of you said no to that question. And today's quick poll is brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, and topsoil throughout the Northwest. Let the Dan Jones trucks put it where you want it and save your aching back. What should we be saying to the couple ruined by the attacks on the bakery known as Sweet Cakes by Melissa? The bakery doesn't even exist anymore because it was driven out of business because there were folks who said if you turn down a gay couple in making a wedding cake, why, you have violated their rights and you have to pay more than $100,000 in fines. That's what they told Aaron Klein and Melissa Klein. Are they going to get an apology now that the case has been decided by, or is being taken up by, the U.S. Supreme Court, involving a Colorado baker who has found himself in exactly the same situation? And should their case before the Oregon Court of Appeals simply go to the straight to the U.S. Supreme Court, which is going to decide this case some point either later on this fall or early next year? We hear a lot about training the police to de-escalate situations and save lives. But have you ever thought about the consequence of saving those lives? I know usually saving a life is a positive thing, but I'm going to let you hear the words of a man who wishes that his black brother had been shot to death by the police because of exactly that kind of situation. It was a call that came into my radio brother, John Carlson, up on KVI. You're going to be stunned by what this brother has to say about his brother and about what the police should have done and about the life that might have been saved in that case. In that June free speech rally in Portland, when Antifa turned violent, the police asked one citizen for help. We'll talk to Todd Kelsey today about what he did and why he did it and why it's so important that we support the police when they face these kinds of challenges. Former Governor John Kitzhaber claims he's been vindicated. But it's interesting. I disagree with him, and so apparently does the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper. And I'll share some of that with you as well. And about those Antifa protesters, the police chief says these folks, yes, they say that they're against fascism. The kind of fascism they get involved in apparently uses urine and feces-filled balloons to shoot at the police. And what should they do when that happens as well? Oh, by the way, we'll talk about the No New Taxes rally that's coming up on July the 1st, and you're going to want to hear about that. And what is the best way to reform American air traffic control, which causes problems for American commercial airlines? We'll talk to Pete Sepp from the National Taxpayers Union about that. And in Washington State, we now have 4 days left, just 4 days, for the legislature, now in triple overtime at the legislative session, to try to come up with some kind of budget. And if they don't, the state government of Washington State begins shutting down this coming Friday. And if somebody is willing to play the dealer in poker games for tip money, Should the state simply stay out of that, or should they get involved and defend the rights of that worker who doesn't want to be defended by the state of Oregon? We'll get into that as well. All of that and your phone calls and emails. Naysayers always go first on this program, and if you want, you can claim the naysayers 90 seconds, uninterrupted, as long as you stick around for a few questions afterward. And by the way, tonight I'm doing my commentary crosstalk with a liberal. His name is Steve Novick. We call it left hook, right jab. And there's a hidden joke in that. If you don't know Steve Novick, the former city commissioner, that's going to be on KGW television tonight in their 6 o'clock hour. Your calls today at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And on Honestly Provocative Talk Radio, you can always send me an email. They all come directly to me. talk@LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
The American Constitution guarantees in writing that all Americans are equal under the law. But when it comes to executing that guarantee, government often shows a serious case of double standards. Let me tell you one example. 18 months ago, a group took over the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge, and they held it for a month. I agreed with some of the principles of the group. I didn't agree with their tactics at all. Every law enforcement agency you can name, from the FBI to the local sheriff's department, showed up to push those occupiers out. In the end, some went to jail. At least one ended up dead. The law says you can't convert public property to your own personal use without getting permission. Fast forward to this week as we watch 20 to 30,000 members of the hippy-dippy rainbow family as it invades the very same Malheur National Forest for this week. For a week of, well, whatever the hippies do in the woods when they're in the woods. Local residents of the sparsely populated area have voiced their objections, and I think they're right, since the rainbow family doesn't have the required permits. Like most left-wing types, they claim, we don't need no stinking permits. In this case, federal authorities have announced they plan to do exactly nothing about this occupation, and you can't help but think that the politics of the group might just play a role in that.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, today's Daily Grill, I'm going to award to the Washington legislature, all of them, for failing after three special sessions to come to terms on a new budget that puts state government on a path to shut down this coming Friday. Now, I may agree with you that an awful lot of state government, when it's shut down, does less harm to the public than when it's up and operating, but they're also including the state parks this Independence Day weekend. And I can only imagine what it's going to do to families if they don't know until Thursday or Friday whether the state parks are going to be open or not. But as you heard on this program, if you were listening last week, the state parks department already has plans to begin the shutdown on Friday if the state government doesn't have a budget. The Washington Policy Center's Jason Mercier writes, with 8 days to go, this was last week, until the end of the fiscal year, where do the 2017 budget negotiations stand? Your guess is as good as mine. He points out the last publicly available budget proposal had the state spending $43 billion, a 13% increase. By the way, anybody's paycheck out there go up by 13%, relying on $1.5 billion in tax increases. The House proposal was for $44.7 billion. That would be a 17% increase over 2 years. How many of you saw your paychecks go up by 17% over the last 2 years? They're counting on $3 billion in tax increases. Both of the budgets blew right past the almost $42 billion in revenue that taxpayers are already providing. That would be a 7% increase. I'd say a 7% increase for 2 years is actually a very healthy increase, but not nearly big enough for the big government types. These budgets represent huge public investments relying on some form of tax increase, and once the white smoke finally rises from the budget negotiations, taxpayers are going to have little time to review the details and the comments before a final vote is taken. Bet on that final vote being taken at about 11 o'clock on Thursday night. Don Hawkins writes in with today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. He says, laugh out loud. Seriously? They say it's to decry the dependence. This is about the naked bike ride on pollution-based transportation. What a load of BS. I guess he means Bernie Sanders. Starting with the majority of bicycles being ridden, how many barrels of crude oil were burned up in the mining process for all the raw materials to build the frame of your oh-so-green transportation? And the fuel burned in processing the raw materials, the machine work, the plating, the anodizing, the hardening of certain components, and the electricity to run those giant factories. From windmills in China, you think? These nice high-pressure tires. Is that artificial rubber or rubber robbed from Mother Nature? Again, manufactured under less strict overseas pollution-producing child labor factories. And were all those foreign-made bicycles shipped to the United States using the force, or were they transported on some huge bunker oil-burning massive cargo ships spewing waste and debris from China to our ports? So spare us this. We're doing this to decry the dependence on pollution-based transportation horse crap. Signed, Don Hawkins. Send those emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you, and glad I got a chance to see a lot of you at our remote from the Northwest Armory store on Friday. On Wednesday and Thursday of this week, we will be broadcasting live from Capitol Hill as part of Feet to the Fire, which has been an annual tradition for our program for more than a decade. 60 of America's top talkers are going to gather on Capitol Hill to do our shows live from Capitol Hill to remind those folks in the big building, you know, the House and the Senate, that they are there to do a job for the American people. And the American people want our immigration laws enforced, and we want a wall built on our southern border. I mentioned the Rainbow Gathering, and Mike is a naysayer on that subject. Mike, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thanks, Lars. Great show. Listen, I just wanted to point out that I think there's a really big difference between these people peacefully gathering under the First Amendment, by the way, as opposed to the ranchers that showed up with guns and they took over an establishment. I think that is wrong. But to peacefully assemble, and anybody's welcome to join their gathering. And it's all done under the name of world peace. So there's a big difference, I think, between using guns and just showing up.
Well, I would agree with you. There is a difference between an armed occupation and an unarmed occupation, although the armed occupiers maintained their position for a month. And I've said I agree with their point on the government ownership of land. I disagreed with their tactics all the way through their occupation. So don't get me wrong. I'm not backing up what the Bundy bunch did by occupying that land. But this bunch is occupying by sheer force of numbers. That is, when you have 20 or 30,000 people show up, it's not very easy. In fact, it's essentially impossible for law enforcement to push them off. And when you say they're gathering peacefully, they're gathering in a very dry forest at a very dry time of the year. And apparently they're planning for campfires and all that. They don't have the proper permits. And while I don't like having to get permits, I think that if you're going to occupy public property, which is open to the public, and you're going to occupy it and use it as your toilet and your garbage dump as well, and you're going to do it without permission, I think you're breaking the rules, and I think the rules should be enforced on the Rainbow family the same way the rules were enforced eventually on the Bundy bunch. Can you agree on that?
Well, I kind of disagree with you claiming it's an occupation. It's a peaceful assembly, and I believe we're protected under
hold
the First Amendment.
Hold on. I'll tell you why I call it an occupation. Hold on. This has nothing to do with the First Amendment. The First Amendment does not let me come to somebody else's property and occupy it. And when I say it's an occupation, they've announced they're going to come. They have been told they need a permit. They have said, we don't need no stinking permit. And they plan to stay there until they decide to leave. I call anybody arriving on somebody else's property and announcing that they plan to stay until they decide to leave, I call that an occupation. How is it not?
Well, it's a gathering.
If I had a gathering...
I actually went last time they were here. I was fine.
So you got a dog?
Shows, I believe it was 10 years ago.
You got a dog in the fight.
And if I came
for a gathering of my family and brought 40 or 50 of my friends to your backyard and told you, Mike, we're not leaving till we decide to leave. Oh, and by the way, we'll be burying
private property, Lars. This is public property. Public land. These are owned by everybody. This land is owned by everybody.
It is owned by everybody, but it has to be used under a set of rules, because otherwise there would be people who'd come in and, you know, there would be people who permanently camp on that land if you could simply do that, which is why they
agree with that. And they have tried to get permits in the past, and they've been denied. So they go ahead anyway.
But they work very closely with the Forest Service.
And they rehabilitate the land when they leave.
They went to the Forest Service, and the Forest Service said, you need a permit. And they said, we don't have any leaders, so we have no one who can sign a permit, so we're going to do it without a permit. Do you think that's a legitimate way to operate?
Okay, that may have been the case this year, but I know in years past they have tried, and they've been denied.
I'm talking about this year.
But I also want to point out that they actually rehabilitate the land after they are done.
You mean they go out and dig up all their poop and take it with them? They dig up their poop and garbage and take it with them?
They recycled everything. They had piles of different... I went back and helped the cleanup effort. I was so impressed with how well they were taking care of the
latrines
land.
They got seeds
from the Forest Service. They replanted all native seeds and covered all the trails that were tramped into the ground. You can go back to that place where they were 10 years ago, and you can't even tell. They did such a great job of rehabilitating. I was seriously impressed. And if people are going
to
do that,
by the way, to your first point about the peaceful gathering, when you occupy a place and refuse to follow the rules, I don't call that peaceful. It's simply occupying. But when you say this is about world peace, how does 30,000 hippies smoking dope in the woods move world peace forward?
Well, it's a peaceful gathering, like I said, and, you know, as far as I know, smoking marijuana is legal now in the state, so, I mean, it's not
in public.
Crime.
Not in public. Not in public.
True. That's true.
You have to be in your home, and this is not their home.
I just kind of take exception to being called an occupation, because these people are doing this peacefully. And I know it's a load, it's a burden on the communities that are close by. I did see that when they came.
So if I come to your house and I set up a tent and I refuse to leave until I'm ready to leave, you wouldn't call that an occupation of your backyard?
Well, of course I would, because it's my private property.
Well, this is property that has to be used under a set of rules. And the rules are to benefit all users of the property, not just the Rainbow Family hippies who show up, occupy, refuse to leave, refuse to follow the rules, and dig slit latrines in the public lands. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. There's something I want to share with you, because on this program, I would say over the last 5 years, this has been one of the most recurrent issues that has come up. And that is when the police confront somebody in a situation, and the somebody they're confronting has mental problems of one kind or another. We often hear the call that police should be trained to de-escalate these situations, because you have somebody who's acting crazy, somebody who is presenting a threat either to themselves or to others. And you say, we want to be able to save that person's life if we can, so the police aren't forced to shoot them. And in most cases, I think that's absolutely right. You should try to save the person's life. If they're mentally ill, that's a wonderful thing to do. What I had not thought of, but something was brought up to my friend, John Carlson, who holds down the fort on one of our affiliate stations, KVI in Seattle. He got a call this morning from the brother of just such a man who had a confrontation with the police. He did extraordinarily dangerous things. He hurt a police officer, a woman. He threw her through a plate glass window. And he could have hurt her much more seriously. He could have killed her. And the police had every justification to take his life, and they did not. But I want you to hear the perspective of the brother of this man about the fact that the police saved his life because of what happened not long after that.
I'm a black American. I've never been to Africa in my entire life, and neither has any of my family members. I grew up in upstate New York, and I want to share a story about my older brother, who is serving life today in prison. Years ago, he was confronted by several police officers. I was there, and my older brother was there as well. And they were questioning him. He was acting stupid. Out of the blue, out of nowhere, he picked up a policewoman, grabbed her by the throat, and threw her through a plate glass window. Now, the police, they subdued him. They did not shoot and kill him. And they could have. But they subdued him. They put him in restraints and took him off to jail. Years later, during another trial, another incident, and I'll tell you about that in a moment, we found out that my brother was diagnosed as schizophrenic. We just thought, as children growing up, that he was evil because his illness always came out that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Years later, several years later, he killed, brutally raped and killed his neighbor, bludgeoning her with a knife, and he slaughtered her in her apartment. She was set to be married. She had just graduated from college, and she never got to attend her wedding. And my brother is serving life, and, you know, it was a horrible situation for our families to go through, both families. But had the police officers shot and killed my black brother, who was out of his mind most of his life, that young woman would be alive today. And so I am just fed up, sick to death with the racial connotations every time a police officer, who I support and call, and they have to be on my payroll as a taxpayer, has to shoot some crazy person who is trying to hurt them or others. And I've just about had it, these people. Now, please understand, I have dealt with bad police officers, very few, over the years, and particularly in Rochester, New York, where I come from. But the police officers that I know and support were not those people. And, like my brother, I have dealt with bad people. And there are some bad people in the world. And for this whole thing to be race-based all the time just sickens me. And I wanted to come on and share that story because I am glad my brother is behind bars. That's the best place for him to be so that he doesn't hurt or kill anybody else. And I wish that the police officers had shot him and perhaps murdered him in order for that young girl to live. And I'm just tired of people always saying that it's the cops shooting a black person because of racism. No. If they had shot my brother, they would have been justified to do so, and that young lady would be alive today. And I wanted to share that on your program. I listen every day. Thank you, guys.
That's Jeff, who's calling in from Auburn, Washington. And, you know, I had not thought it through that far to think the day you save the life of the crazy person who's presenting the kind of threat to the police that would justify the police in shooting him, that when you save his life and you say, you see, we've taught the police to de-escalate, in some cases, you will be saving the life of somebody who goes on to murder and rape or kill somebody later on. And that is one of the consequences. I'm not saying that you then teach the police shoot in every single case, kill in every single case. But you have to think about the long-term consequences when we de-escalate and we save the life of that person. In some cases, you're going to be forfeiting the life of an innocent person at some point in the future. Let's go to your calls now. Let's go first to Dan, who's a naysayer. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hi, Lars. I think you're handling the situation with these poor kids all wrong. You're talking, you can't take care of them because there's too many of them.
Which kids? The so-called rainbow family?
Several other people in the area that have airplanes and spray fields. And these kids are out there in the sun, and it's hot, and you're kind of picking on them. So I suggest you get the Forest Service or somebody to go over there and help cool them down. But instead of using regular water, there's a dairy right next door there. You spray them down with a little green water. They're the green people. Give them a little green water. And I don't think they're going to be too happy, and their music's going to get kind of interrupted a little bit.
that I don't think they're going to stay around after they've been treated with the organic green water from the dairy.
But it will be all natural. Dan, thank you very much. I always love a good naysayer. Let's go to Gene in Gresham. That made Gene laugh. Gene, how are you doing today?
That is making me laugh. I'm fine, Lars. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
My question is this. You mentioned Johnny Depp's comments at the top of the show, and I don't understand why Johnny Depp and Madonna and others that have made these horrible comments in front of huge crowds, when does free speech become sedition? Why aren't they getting charged with sedition?
Well, sedition being advocating the violent overthrow of the United States, which is a crime.
Well,
I wouldn't go that far.
When you look at the definition of it, though, and when you look at the definition of it, it's not that specific. I mean, it's got some other elements to
it. Well, I'd go for the easier charge, the one that I think fits appropriate, because I want, when people are charged with a crime, I want to see them charged with the one that fits their crime. So
that's,
if they,
that's gonna
you know,
work.
Go out and destroy something, but they don't burn it, you call it malicious mischief. Or if they burn it, then you call it arson. But you try to hit it with the law that fits. The one that fits here is it is illegal to threaten the life of the president, the vice president, secretary of state. There are a number of people and their families. And I think Johnny Depp has done that. I think Madonna has done that. And I would have no problem with seeing them charged with that crime.
Then why isn't that happening?
I think because, Gene, you pick your battles. And if the attorney general, Jeff Sessions, were to say, I'm going to bring criminal charges against Johnny Depp, what the left would do is they would make him into a martyr. They'd make him into a hero. And they would say all he was doing was speaking his mind in a particular forceful way. And it would work against the right things in this country. I think that when you engage in that kind of extreme hyperbole of threatening the life of a president by saying, when was the last time that an actor assassinated a president? And it was clear from the comments he made before and after that he was referring to himself, the actor, and to President Trump, the president.
Absolutely.
That just having the Secret Service go out and have a nice talk with him, and if they wanted to bring the charge, they could. I'd love to see this creep who's apparently unhappy with his life now. He basically flushed.
His movie is a bomb, so he's mad.
Well, and he flushed $650 million. He's made $650 million, two-thirds of $1 billion, and apparently he's blown through all of it. And now he's either broke or as close to broke as you get if you're a movie star. And he's not happy with his life, so now he's threatening people. I think he needs to have at least a serious conversation with the Secret Service. Gene, thank you for the call. Back in just a moment. We're live on the Radio Northwest Network, broadcasting live from Capitol Hill on Wednesday and Thursday, and then from the birthplace of freedom, Charlottesville, Virginia, on First Amendment Friday. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the program. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails in just a while, but you might have noticed that there was a little bit of a kerfuffle about the assistance that a citizen gave to the police when the police were confronting some violent protesters, part of that group called Antifa or Antifa, whichever you prefer. And they enlisted the help of a local civilian, Todd Kelsey, who joins me now, who's part of the Peacekeepers group and a U.S. Army veteran and a member of a Patriots group as well. Todd, good to have you on the program.
Good to be on, Lars. Thank you.
So tell me what happened that day as there was a peaceful protest being staged by pro-free speech folks and pro-Donald Trump folks. And then there were the opposition groups who had virtually ringed them with protests on every other block around them in downtown Portland. This happened not long ago. And some of these people got crazy enough to try to charge toward the peaceful protesters where they were carrying out their permitted protest to try to interrupt them. What happened?
Well, sir, we showed up. I mean, we were there that day as a crowd control, basically for the peaceful side, for the pro Trump rally, for the free speech rally,
Don't worry about you. Just telling the story.
You're one of my favorite shows.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Anyway. During the day, we had marbles slingshotted at us and rocks thrown at police officers. And so my group went there today or that day to just try to you know, create a buffer zone, do crowd control on the free speech rally, so the police, you know, had enough room to do their job. Throughout the day, we had Antifa members coming into the rally. They were, you know, there were several rules set aside by the people that were putting on the rally, that they didn't want masks on inside the rally. They didn't want any weapons inside the rally. And of course, the police force didn't want any weapons inside the rally. And we were trying to stop any weapons from coming in and, like say, give the police officers a buffer zone to work. And on the one occasion involving the arrest that I was, I guess you could say involved in, Antifa member, or I guess he was an Antifa member, came into the rally, was wearing a mask. We asked him to remove his mask. He refused. The sidewalk area where he was standing had been closed by the police officers about an hour previous to, or 30 minutes previous to, the time he was there. And we were asking him to leave. We didn't want any fights. We didn't want anybody to get injured, or we really didn't want anybody to even get arrested. We wanted the people to be able to come in there and express their First Amendment rights and have a peaceful rally and not get, you know, beat up for that. Anyway, I approached him. Several people approached him, asked him to leave. He refused. And then when the police officers came up to him, he took off running. He was late, very shortly thereafter, tackled and I followed, because that's where problems arise. When something goes out of control, things have a tendency to downgrade very quickly. That's where fights erupt and multiple people get hurt. So I followed. The police officers had him on the ground, and I squatted down to help. In my experience, the more hands you have on a person, especially when they're struggling, the less likely they are that anybody's going to get injured.
Yeah, either the bad guy or the police officers.
Exactly. And that was my intent. During that time, I believe it was one of the federal agents, I'm not quite sure, asked, could somebody get my handcuffs off my back? Because they were on a carabiner on his back. And I said, I got them. And I removed the handcuffs off his back and handed them to him. And then, he got cuffed and arrested and carted away. It became a big deal, and I don't understand why. I was doing what I would hope any concerned American citizen would do. I was trying to reduce possible injury of all parties involved. And,
Well, you know, one of the things, Todd, that came up, and we're going to come close to the top of the hour tonight, but I hadn't realized until I read the police chief's response, because apparently the mayor got all concerned that some of these snowflake Antifa types who will throw urine and feces and everything else and rocks and bottles at the cops, they all of a sudden melt when they see a citizen actually helping out the police. Maybe it's just the whole idea of citizens actually siding with the police and helping with the police is a big deal to them. But he cited that there's apparently a law in the books that a police officer has the right to enlist public help. And if you refuse to help him out, you're actually violating the law. Now, most of the time, the police want you to just stay out of the way, which I think is sensible, because they don't know if you're a good guy or a bad guy if you walk up and say, let me help you grab the guy. But if a police officer asks for help, I think any reasonable citizen, and in that I don't describe the Antifa types, any reasonable person would say, of course, I'm happy to help out. And they don't, you know, the police officers don't want you to get hurt. But Todd, congratulations to you and to your group for providing security for freedom-loving Americans, because obviously, these days, the hateful left and their allies in the Antifa group are out there trying to cause as much trouble as possible, I guess on the theory that if they can cause a bunch of trouble, they'll stop America from becoming great again, which is a sad way to act as an American, but I guess they have the right to do that till they break the law. You've got the Lars Larson Show.